We do our thing every month when it comes to the Kauffman Interfaith Institute doing great things in our community. Always a pleasure to have those who call Kauffman Faith Institute home away from home. That would be you, Dr. Douglas Kinchy. Good morning to you.
Morning, Shelley.
Appreciate you. Program manager as well, Kyle Queers. Yep. Good morning to you, Kyle.
Thanks, Shelley. Always a privilege to be
good.
Here.
Doug, you've been grounded for a while. Are you out exploring?
I've been hanging around here, yes. I'm not flying out too soon here in the future.
Tell me again about the role of the Institute in our community.
Well, as I hope our listeners remember, the Kauffman Interfaith Institute has been working in the West Michigan community for about 6 years now, 7 years, and we're finding more and more support for what we're doing. There is a new narrative out there, and that is that people want to be part of interfaith. They want to be part of coming together and saying, you know, no matter what's happening in the political scene, that's not us. You know, we're here to support our fellow citizens and, frankly, to support those who are coming in as refugees and want to find peace and freedom in our wonderful land. So it's been a very interesting time for us. Regardless of who you voted for, and we don't go political here at all, there is a strong coming together. It was represented by the Interfaith Thanksgiving celebration that we had in November. We had twice as many people as we normally have for that. 750 people showed up for the Interfaith Thanksgiving celebration. And we're finding even more and more of that kind of support. So we think it's a wonderful time, really, to say we're one community. All of our faith traditions say love your neighbor. And that's the business we're in right now.
Thank you. Before we bring in our special guest, Kyle, doing great things, managing programs at Kauffman, many programs in between.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, from task forces to different discussions and gatherings, you know, to echo what Doug was saying, Shelley, ever since that Thanksgiving gathering, we are seeing new faces emerge at these interfaith gatherings, and that is such a wonderful thing. You know, you sort of have your staples and your consistent members of groups that you can bank on being there every time. Churches, mosques, synagogues, other faith communities that always seem to be present, as well as our secular friends out there. But the new folks that are coming out is really, really encouraging to see the community really coming together to respond to things that they see in the news, but I think more importantly, just to build some good relationships with new friends.
Doug, let's introduce our guests and begin our conversation.
I'm very pleased to have as our guest for today's segment Dr. Ali Metwali. Ali is the president of the Attahid Mosque on East Paris, one of the leading mosques in our community. And Ali has been a great supporter of our interfaith efforts for some time. And they sponsored an event just a couple of weeks ago in which we invited representatives from Christian and Jewish congregations to meet at Attahid for a wonderful dinner. We were trying to get just the leadership people, but it kept growing and growing. We had over 200 people at that event. They were wonderful hosts. And anyway, Ali has been very supportive of this. So Ali Metwali, happy to have you with us.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be here with you. You're always a very strong supporter of our community and all the other interfaith community in Grand Rapids. You made it a better community.
Yes, and before Doug leads our conversation, you have several hats. You're a professor of finance with Western Michigan.
Yes, I am.
Yes, yeah. I'm number crunching on the side. Douglas.
In addition to many other things.
Yes.
Healthy competition between the two universities, but we're good friends, and it's kind of like interfaith. We don't have to have the same loyalties to come together and work
Absolutely.
Together, and that's what's going on here.
Absolutely.
But one of the issues that's in the news a lot is the whole role of refugees, and of course this is affecting a lot from the Muslim community, and we've worked with Syrian refugees and with the refugee organizations, and we want to make it clear that our position here is that we are supportive of the refugees. You have to remember that the refugees are legal. They are legal immigrants. They have documentation. They have visas to allow them to be here. They're not here illegally. They're here very legally. And the other thing that's very important to understand is that refugees have virtually never been a part of terrorism. It's so sad that the narrative is out there that somehow we're threatened by the refugees. I did some research on this, and there have been 2.3 million refugees that have brought into our country since 1975 in the 40-year period that we have statistics now. Not a single Muslim refugee has been involved in a terrorist activity that brought death. Not one. The only cases go back to the 1970s. They were Cuban refugees that did get involved in some terrorist activity, but not a single Muslim refugee has been involved in a terrorist act that brought death. And you know, they're probably the safest group of people among our streets. In fact, there was an article, I think it was David Brooks that wrote in New York Times, that if we want to make our streets safer, we should get more refugees and more immigrants, because the crime rate is lower, significantly lower among immigrants and particularly among refugees.
Great. So tell us, I trust, how perhaps you work with refugees?
Yeah, we have a committee that works with the refugees and try to help them out to get to be settled in the community, provide whatever assistance, and we have a fund, refugee fund, that help them acquire cars and, you know, if they need furniture, whatever they need, we try to accommodate them. But there is an environment of fear on the part of the refugees right now, in spite of the fact that they are legal. They don't know what will happen tomorrow, and that is the area that they it concerns us, you know. And we hope that these people get settled, and they are trying to get settled in the process.
Yeah, and certainly as we think about being a city that's welcoming to refugees, there are a lot of organizations and people out there that have a lot of positive energy that they're trying to channel to show folks that they are welcomed, and that those are here, that are here, have a meaningful and substantial part in our community. And I think that, you know, for folks that are wondering, how do we respond to different events as they take place, as legislation as it comes out, you know, we would just encourage, you know, before things happen, develop relationships with folks, because a lot of times, you know, we see an executive order come out, and it's followed by folks who want to hold signs and protest. And what we found is dialoguing with the refugee community, dialoguing with the Muslim community, it's really important to know what their concerns are, what their needs are, and what their desires are in terms of the message that's being shared in the community.
I just want to build on that, because my wife and I are working now with a refugee family from Iraq. And just to give an example of how much the vetting, how critical and how thorough that is. This is a family that our church sponsored the sister of the gentleman and his family that came 8 years ago. His sister and her family have been here for all that time. His father is now here, and his brother is now here. And in spite of all of that, they had to spend 2 years in a refugee camp in Jordan, waiting and going through the vetting process before they could arrive. And they get here with their three wonderful children, and both the husband and the wife have bachelor's degrees in chemistry. I mean, it's almost shameful how we're skimming the very cream of the crop off of that refugee community. And they're the last ones we want to be discouraging or putting a block and blocking them from coming. They're the people. They're going to be a very important part of our community, our economy, of what it means to be American.
And actually, their aim when they come into this country is to have a peace of mind and live and work. And majority, even the young people, go out and search for jobs because what they have gone through before, the suffering. And when they come in here and find out that the refugees are looked at as a, you know, terrorist, it makes it very hard for them even to get out of their homes because of their fear.
You know, the statistics show that refugees and immigrants are much higher percentage of entrepreneurs. And now, why could that be? Well, what does it make? What does it take to be a successful entrepreneur? Well, you're dissatisfied with the way things are. Mm-hmm. You're willing to work hard, and you're willing to take risk. Well, that's exactly what a refugee is, an immigrant. They're dissatisfied with the violence in their country or whatever it is. They're willing to take risk, and they're willing to work hard. They really work hard. And, in fact, another statistic that came out from one of the refugee groups that we talked to is that the average refugee becomes self-supporting within 4 or 5 months, and then they compared that to the average college graduate, how long it takes them to be self-supporting. And as a parent, I can relate to that as well. So, you know, these are the people we want to welcome with open arms.
Talk a little bit more, give me an example, or perhaps how your mosque works with the refugee.
We try. We have, as I mentioned, we have a committee made up of three physicians in town that are from that part of the world, the Syrian, and they try very much to hold their hands. Actually, during the week in school, we have one of the physicians pick up the kids because the parents don't have yet a car to take them to the week in school so they can learn and be part of the community and intermingle with the others. And, you know, we try to provide as much as we can, mm-hmm. help with jobs. We try to search for them. When we know somebody in town that have a job open, we kind of relate that to the refugees. All what they wanted is to live in peace after the hardship that they had, mm-hmm. and to be a good citizen, mm-hmm. and more loyal to the U.S. for the opportunity to come into this country.
The other thing we've done, Shelley, is that after when the anxiety became obvious in the political situation, we did a listening tour. A group from Kaufman went and visited each of the four mosques in town, and we said, "Tell us your concerns and tell us what we might be able to do to help." And out of that came a new program that we're developing. We're calling it Standing Together. And we're developing partnerships now so that each of the mosques will have two or three Christian groups, congregations that will partner with them and be there for them so that as anxiety or and whatever may come up in the future, they will know that they have an ally and and friends in a community that will support them. Also, the Temple Emmanuel, the Jewish community, is involved in this support partnership program as well. So we're excited about that this is an opportunity for getting more contacts between the majority community and the other communities that are right here in Grand Rapids.
In addition to that, since the change in administration, we are overwhelmed with letters and postcards of supporting us, and we're putting them around the mosque inside so the people would know that there is security. We get flowers from people telling us that you are welcome in this community, and that makes us feel great. But this is the effort that Kaufman Institute have been working on for the last few years, and we appreciate that.
Senegan Kyle, again, part of Kaufman's efforts to build partnerships happening as we speak.
Certainly, yeah, and we are very involved with organizations like Bethany and Samaritas that are doing the on-the-ground work of facilitating the experience of refugees as they're transitioning into the country and then caring for them once they arrive. You know, and this work is not limited to the Abrahamic traditions. Certainly, all walks of faith and non-faith are needed in this work, and so, you know, when folks kind of feel that impetus of, I want to do something, I want to respond to this, you know, a couple quick things, letter writing or calling legislators and representatives, that it has a huge impact. If you make a phone call or you write a letter, that is heard. And that certainly gets the voice out there that refugees are folks that we value and play a vital role in our community. Donating to organizations like Bethany and Samaritas as they are facing significant budget cuts is huge. Supporting them financially, volunteering with them. And then the other thing they made clear, if folks have the capacity, there's a huge need to foster refugee children right now. I believe the age range is somewhere between 13 and 16, but children of all ages that right now are quite frankly suffering and perhaps dying in these refugee camps. Now more than ever, if folks really want to get involved and make a change, get their voice heard, any number of ways to do that.
We're going to continue the refugee conversation. Our 10:45 interview is with the Refugee Education Center Executive Director, so this topic doesn't go away. Doug?
We're as I indicated, we're so pleased that there are so many positive things happening in our community. You know, this is the kind of stuff that doesn't show up on the headlines of the newspaper. You know, someone once pointed out that you never read a headline that an airplane landed safely at the Gerald Ford Airport. That's not news. It's the negative is the news, and we're hearing so much of that negative. And yet this community, and I'm sure it's happening all over the country, there's so much positive response. It's not only anti-Muslim and anti-refugee that's happening, but also anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic activity. There was the Chicago Loop Synagogue there were swastikas put up on the entryway, on the windows. The window was smashed. The response to that was 1,000 people came out to a support your neighbor, we love our neighbor kind of event that came out afterwards to support. Now, those kind of support things don't hit the news, and so it's important that we get that word out that there is all over this country there is that kind of thing happening.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, since the change of the political environment, we are making lots of changes to protect against somebody coming in and smashing doors and smashing window. We never locked our doors before. Now we're locking them between prayers because of that kind of a fear, and it reflects in our community. I'm just hoping that the political side of the system would stand up and say something so we can change the environment that we have. Most of the politicians in town, I haven't heard anything from them to try to assure the communities that we are standing with you, like what Kaufman is doing for the community. So I'm just hoping at a point that the political arm of our government stand up and saying something positive.
Asking for a call to action. We have about 5 minutes left. Obviously, we want to hear closing comments, but are there upcoming events on behalf of the Institute to share, Kyle?
Yeah, the biggest one, and I think one of the most pertinent for this issue, on March 30th, we are having our annual Siegel Lecture featuring Dr. Simran Jeet Singh, who will be lecturing on a number of things, but Islamophobia and hate crimes. Now, Dr. Singh is a member of the Sikh community and will be speaking from that perspective in terms of how Islamophobia affects many, many people groups. Again, as we heard before, as stigmas come into play, as images and stereotypes linger in people's minds as to what people groups tend to look like or how they tend to dress or act. And so this will be a wonderful time for folks to kind of hear how some of those false perceptions really have a negative impact upon our community as a whole, but then what we might do in light of that. More information available on our website. And again, if folks are wondering how to take the first step in this conversation, interfaithunderstanding.org, we invite them to give us a look. There are many ways to get involved, to learn, to simply be in a room and make new friends. So I refer folks to our website if they want to take that first step.
Awesome.
Yeah, the Siegel Lecture will be at the Lucimar Auditorium for downtown. We're going to be doing wide publicity on that, so I would encourage people to go to our website and register. We're afraid that we may have capacity problems, but we are going to provide overflow if necessary. But if you register, you get a better shot at getting a place there. I think it's going to be a very important event, Siegel Lecture on March 30th.
Dr. Metwali, what would you like to leave us with?
Well, we are extremely positive. We open our doors to everybody that wants to come in. Our community outreach, bring in and invite whoever wants to come if they connect with us on our website and decide when they wanted to come. Our doors will be open and we get them in and talk with them about who we are, and we're extremely positive, so we're moving ahead, and we're hoping that this cloud will pass.
What is your website?
Pardon me?
What is your website?
Grand Rapids Masjid. kaufmaninterfaithinstitute.com.
Great. Great. We'll have that information here, too, if one needs that. And this interview, it will be podcast in the afternoon. Thank you very much for your leadership in our community, Dr. Metwali, on behalf of At-Tawhid Mosque here off of East Paris. You as well, Kyle Coyers, Program Manager at Kauffman Interfaith Institute. Dr. Kinshi, take us home.
Yes, thank you for having us on each month. It's exciting to tell the world, or at least West Michigan, what's happening here on the positive side. And again, our website, www.interfaithunderstanding, all one word, .org.